You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
This has been one of the busiest days of the JSE year so far, with so many trading statements and so many sets of results coming out. So who better to analyse the day than Graham Koerner from Koerner Perspective in Johannesburg? And a few results came up and I thought of you, Graham, but I'm going to have to go through them. I'm not going to cherry pick. I'm going to go through them and you can say, Lindsay, I don't want to talk about that one. Let's move on to the next one. So I'm going to start with 7:05 this morning. Adcock Ingram Holdings Limited, results out, share price down a couple of percent as we pre-record this. Do you look at this one?
We don't. We sort of selected Aspen as our play in that space. I think Adcock is doing better things, but at the same time, you sort of say, well, if Bidvest have decided, that it's an asset for sale, then it sort of speaks volumes to me. But yeah, the market clearly didn't like the update, down 3.8% on the day, and on a 1-year view, down almost a 30%. So yeah, it's not looking good. And I think the problem is, as you've seen with Aspen, it's actually quite difficult to build earnings momentum in these businesses because, there are lots of challenges. If you own original patents, you've got the generics guys coming for you in space, generic space. It's really become a scale game. So it really is a difficult one.
Okay, so you don't look at that one. You've chosen your particular security, your particular company in that space, and that's the end of it. Okay, well done. On to the next one, and the next one is Liberty Holdings Limited, trading statement in respect of the year ended 31st of December. Share price, as we speak, pre-recorded, down 2.75%. Liberty has been through such tough times over the years and has gone through various iterations. What's it doing now?
Well, I think they're busy reinventing themselves. Obviously Liberty is of interest to us because, Standard Bank, owns a big block of it. One of the problems for us with life insurance companies is they bring, financial markets through their income statements, and there are lots of moving parts, and that tends to, mask things. I must be honest, I don't like, because, barring Discovery, which to me is sort of accidentally almost a life insurer, we don't like life insurance companies as a rule. We think it's, ultimately they are glorified asset managers, and it's pretty difficult to grow let's call it the traditional AUM materially. But I, having said that, I do think Liberty Holdings is getting it right. I think they're also doing it at a time where a couple of their competitors have had a pretty tough time of it. You've looked at, the likes of MMI and even Old Mutual. So I get the feeling that out of the bunch, Liberty Holdings is the one that's looking quite interesting to me in terms of a recovery. And if you just look at it in context, and we must always be careful in markets like these to sort of attach too much store to the recent past. But you look at that share, it's back at where it was, at the beginning of 2013, for example. And, the likes of Sunlum, of course, have done a hell of a lot better. So, obviously quite a few own goals, through the process, but, you just compare it, as I say, Liberty Holdings virtually flat over the last 7 years or so, and somebody like Sunlum is probably just about doubled. So I think there's, if they can do the basics right, do good underlying business, start getting some flows, get a little bit of assets under management, I think this one could be quite interesting. But, I suppose from our point of view, largely academic, we're more interested in the contribution that it could make to Standard Bank, where, it actually comes right at the end when Standard Bank release and they tell you what's happening in, CIB and personal and business banking and the rest of Africa, and then you get this one coming right at the end. And it's, probably what I think about an 8% contributor more often than not. So that's the only interest we really have in Liberty Holdings. And as I say, I think out of all of them, it could be quite an interesting one over the next 3 or 4 years.
What's been very interesting for a long time now is Woolworths Holdings Limited, unaudited interim group results for the 26 weeks ended 29th of December, cash dividend declaration as well, share price down around about 2.5% at the moment. And it's gone from where it is now in the low 40s to the low 50s recently, now back to the low 40s. And this looks, I don't know. It just looks a bit precarious to me, I must admit. I thought it would put in a bottom. Maybe this, if you're a Chartist, maybe this is a double bottom. Maybe this is the time to buy. But anyway, those results not good. Women's wear not doing well. Food always doing well. And I don't know. I wish they could just do what they do with food in other areas of their business.
Yeah, and I think the, in inverted commas, new management need to clean it up. And, you know, it's easy to say put David Jones behind you, but the reality is they paid a, you know, truckload of money for that, and you can't just walk away from it. So I think they've got to try and nurse that back in a very difficult Australian retail environment. I think, you know, if I look at the Woolworths stores, and, you know, Peter Lynch always says, if you want to do your research, walk around the store and see, you know, how busy it is and how full people's baskets are. And I get the sense that Woolworths is definitely not riding the wave that they did 5 years ago when everybody said, you know, LSM 9s and 10s are bulletproof. I think things like immigration and the fact that the likes of Checkers are kind of getting that premium offering right in certain areas is definitely hurting them a little bit. But I think at its core, the food business is still good. I think the clothing business has been patchy at best for some time. If they can get that business right and arrest the damage at David Jones, it probably could have quite an interesting future. But, you know, it's like Massmart. But I think the difference is you kind of get the feeling that Massmart has taken a lot of it on the chin, and there's probably quite a lot of optionality. Whereas Woolworths, I think the core bread and butter business, if you look at food, for example, and maybe some of the other South African operations, have generally traded well. Whereas somebody like Massmart has been absolutely hammered, you know, down 42% in the last year. And, you know, I was just reading earlier today, and you get the feeling that Walmart have kind of had enough, and they're now probably going to start demanding their pound of flesh. But yeah, look, I mean, there's so many companies in South Africa, Lindsay, who, and you would say, well, I told you so. You know, you could see the mood in South Africa is grim, and the confidence in the government's potential to turn this thing around was slipping. You know, so you're seeing a lot of companies come out with 15-20% down. So, and I think, unfortunately, they are one of those.
Truworths is the next one, and we're only up to 7:30 in the morning from the Stock Exchange and new service announcements. Truworths, I had a really good chat with one of my favorite CEOs, a man who's honest and tells it straight, never pulls the wool over your eyes. His name is Michael Mark, and you can listen to that on strictlybusinesspodcast.com. But anyway, Truworths came out with numbers, and I think what happened was that it was in the price anyway, these very, very anemic numbers. They weren't down, but they weren't particularly up either, just very, very slightly higher when it comes to headline earnings per share and earnings per share, etc. But anyway, the share price up around about 5% at the moment, mainly because of the last few weeks since the results were collated, they've done well. But a nimble company that is holding its own, that's the way I can describe it.
Yeah, and I think Michael Mark has for a long time been seen as, you know, one of the best retailers, rightly, in South Africa. A few years ago was obviously on his way out, and then, you know, came back in through the revolving door.
Yes.
But the reality is, I think to your point, they are well run, they are nimble. You know, to sort of be treading water in this environment is a credit, particularly if you can manage the costs. So, yeah, and market is definitely happier with those results than what you've seen out of some of the others, with the stock up over 5% on the day. And that, you know, it's on a day where, you know, you've got, you know, the gold stocks up and a couple of the small caps that have been hit quite hard in the last while. But, you know, it out of the bigger caps is definitely the biggest performer. Maybe Sappi is similar, around 5.4% up, but the rest of the, you know, the market is looking pretty dull, down about 0.25% on the all share.
Okay, here's the one that you're looking forward to. Discovery Limited, the interim results for the 6 months ended 31st of December. When the trading update came out just a few days ago, the market punished it. And now the market is saying, well, that's all in the price as well. So we're flat to 0.5% higher, something like that. But if you look at the share price of around 107 Rand per share, it's not that far off the recent low, or the 52-week low, I think it is, of around about 98, 99 Rand a share. So people still not quite convinced about this one, Graham, but I know you're a big fan, as I am, but just something at the moment not quite gelling with the investment community.
Well, I think there are a few things that are not gelling. You know, firstly, they obviously have got a a rapidly growing footprint in China, and markets are worried about that. I think the NHI has the sword of Damocles seems to be hanging over their head. The combination of their Chinese operations, which has become very significant in terms of number of lives in their world, NHI, I think, is a big issue for them. Concerns and uncertainties about how that thing is going to play out, because it looks as though, you know, Dr. Mukhezi seems hell-bent on actually rolling this thing out. And then, you know, more recently, of course, the medical regulators coming up with sort of findings against them. So I think there's a lot of anxiety around. But we still think it's a really well-run business, and it's one to definitely add on the long term. And I would see this, again, today it rallied, but it's now back at sort of just under 107 as we speak, and I get the feeling that, that's a really good level at which to buy this thing on a five-year view. And again, I think you'll look back in 5 years' time and you'll say, okay, well, we knew they'd invested in, you know, in all these new ventures, and including the bank, and it may not, you know, become huge money spinner over the next 2 or 3 years, but I think over time that kind of pie chart of the earnings contribution from different offerings and different geographies are going to make it look very different 5 years from now. So I think you want to be using this weakness and the general negativity and sentiment, because it's obviously affecting all the life offices, just as it is them.
Anglo American PLC, their results for the year ended 31st of December. What a story this has been. I mean, we knew, of course, that it was going to be a great set of results because of what we've seen with Anglo American Platinum and Kumba Iron Ore and the dividends that those two subsidiaries of the parent company have paid them. So we knew that they were going to do well, even though, you know, when you see the results in black and white, it does your heart good, I suppose, to be a South African investor and someone who has followed the JSE for a long time, because Anglo American is still important.
Yeah, but you know, we were joking in the office earlier today, and 5 years ago, you know, people were wanting to crucify you for holding Anglo American when, you know, there were big questions around the solvency, and how over the last 4 years and 5 years it's just become the absolute star. And you know, Kutufani was bragging about the total return that shareholders have received over the last 5 years, and on Bloomberg, I think he was quoting numbers of 34%. You know, between dividends and share price, and
yes,
and I think that is very gratifying. I think the diamond market might have been dealt a little bit of a temporary blow, courtesy of what's happening in China. But you know, the long and the short of it is, these are the reasons that it's good to have diversified portfolios. You know, truthfully, in the last little while, we rebalanced and took some of the, you know, the overweight positions in Anglos and BHP off the table. And this was all even before the coronavirus, because, yeah, absolutely. You know, iron ore has been strong. Kumba's been spitting cash, delivering good results, you know, nice dividends out of Amplats as well. But you just got to be careful. You know, just as it was a screaming buy at 60, 80 or 100 Rand, you know, you also don't want to assume it's just going to carry on going up forever.
No. Exactly. Cyclicality is the word that you have to be very, very wary of. I'm just looking at this one now because this is one of your favourites. And it's City Lodge, Graham. I mean, just put your cards on the table here. You've spoken about City Lodge on several occasions. You do hold the stock, correct?
Yes.
Average occupancy.
Sounds like a cross-examination and, hostile prosecutor.
Exactly, yeah. You're like Jay Powell now in front of Congress. Why on earth did you cut interest rates when you said you were going to raise them? Commentary, average occupancy.
I feel more like Dudu Mnyeni in the High Court, but...
Okay, yeah. Dudu, listen to this. Average occupancies for the group in the 6 months to the 31st of December declined to 54% from 58% in the previous interim period. So you've got a hotel, you've got 100 rooms, and only 54 are occupied. That's not a great business at the moment. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think you're right. But I think that the flip side to that is that these are record lows, and courtesy of business confidence at, you know, almost a generation low. I still think at its core, it's a good business. Possibly the expansion into some of the African markets, locations not ideal and timing not great. But yeah, I still think it's a good business. And again, you sort of look at it and you say, well, you know, how much lower do we actually think these occupancy rates are going to go? And if you think about it, that share, we didn't buy them. We bought them relatively recently. But, you know, that share literally at the beginning of 2018 was 171 Rand a share. And just if I look quickly on the chart. So, you know, from there to 53, it's lost, probably almost 70% of its value. And the issue is it's still fundamentally the same business. In fact, if you go all the way back, it's probably now trading at lower than it was, after the GFC. So if I just look quickly, it was trading at 75 Rand in 2007, 2008. So I think that puts it in context. But on the short term, anybody who's seen to have the potential to disappoint and where the business model has got operating leverage that's working in reverse, nobody wants to touch it. But my guess is those are the kinds of stocks from these levels that you could get very good returns on over the next few years. But short-term liquidity is appalling, and nobody wants to hold it. And I think increasingly the narrative towards South Africa has become a very negative one. And you can just see there's a dearth of buyers there. It's tightly held, and that's, of course, one of the other problems. There's just very little space for the institutions to get in.
Okay, this is one to sit on for the next few years, and hopefully the South African economy and tourism and everything else starts to pick up. On a positive note, just like the first 7 weeks of the Truworths period since their results, the first 7 weeks of the second half of the financial year for City Lodge have seen some better trends, it says here, with occupancies running at similar levels to the prior year, which is good news, I think. So you're holding this one, aren't you? I mean, you're going to hold it, or you're going to...
Yeah, absolutely.
Answer it?
I mean... Yeah, you're not going to pay $80 or $90 for it and then go and sell it at 53 because you want to get rid of the evidence, so to speak. So I think it's still a decent business. I think management now have to dig deep. But coming back to the issue of the occupancy rates, historically, I think the average, if you take a 10-year, it's probably around about 60%, 61%, 62%. I think the 2010 euphoria, it might have got up to around the 70 mark, but it hasn't been this low for a very long time. But I think you can't sort of say, well, only one in 54 out of 100 rooms are occupied. I think the reality is that it is a business travel market, and effectively, the weeks are generally busier. But yeah, I do agree. I think it's a competitive space. There's a lack of tourism. There's a lack of business travel, and they're fighting the 4 and 5 stars as well. So it's now up to Andrew Whittaker and his team to try and make lemonade with the lemons that they've been given, and hopefully, position this business well and manage the costs. But that really is a business, I think, that's got really good operating leverage. When the occupancy rates improve and things turn around, it goes exactly the other way around.
Good. Yeah, I stayed to one near the Johannesburg, or rather O.R. Tambo International Airport, not that long ago. It's an efficient place. I mean, you're not going to have your wedding reception there, but I mean, it's good. It's good. If you're silly enough to get married, it's good, honest stuff. Advanced Health Limited, they came out with a trading statement down 9%. We don't look at that one, do we?
No.
Freedom Property Fund, their results came out. It's a penny stock, 7 cents, hasn't traded today, or it's rather unchanged. No. Don't look at that one. Putprop, no, they came out with a trading statement. We don't look at that one either. But we do look at the Bidvest Group. Bidcorp came out with their numbers yesterday, and now Bidvest, the South African operation, down 5 and a bit percent. Yeah, that's a South African story, isn't it?
Well, it's a South African story, and I think it's for me... an example of how people can just get it fundamentally wrong. Bidvest is a great company. We've spoken about it so many times, but it's largely a GDP proxy. It can't do much more than nominal GDP, maybe a couple of percent points above that. So, how the hell people can pay 20 multiples for this thing is a mystery to me. But when the mighty Bidvest, telling you that normalized HEPS are going to be down, call it 5%, and reported headline number down, I think, 23%. You know that times are tough out there. And, of course, some mark-to-market effects. But it's a really competitive and a very, very difficult economy to try and function in.
Do you own Bidvest? Do you want to own Bidvest? Is it starting to offer value?
So do we own it? Yeah, we still own it for quite a lot of clients. We haven't bought it for a very long time. Do we like the business? Yeah, I think Bidcorp is probably a better business. Gives you more, probably similar earnings growth rates in euros or pounds or dollars than this one gives you in rands. So I think truthfully, Bidcorp is better. And if you're going to be playing in that sort of space. I think there are probably a few other businesses that give you, I think, more energy and more levers to pull than Bidvest.
Just having a look at these the last couple of weeks since we've spoken. In fact, I think it's been 3 weeks since we've spoken, Graham. There's been a lot of results. And what I'm seeing is an old school style JSE. In other words, it's split between the Rand Hedge stocks and the digging stocks and the other stocks, the retailers and the producers in other areas, the service industries, the manufacturing industries. And it really is, there's a real split down the middle. And maybe it's just a short-term phenomenon, I don't know, but it just suddenly it seems as though it's just like the old days. And we used to speak about this many, many years ago when you and I first started talking. It was like this, and now it's reverted to the mean.
Mm. But I think you've got to be careful. So, you know, there was a time when our market flew if Anglo's and BHP Billiton performed. There was a time when, if memory serves, BHP was for 14% of the index and Anglo's, I think, was 11%, and they were the two biggest components. I'm going back over a decade.
Yes.
And, you know, if they had a good quarter, then, you know, investors had a good quarter. And I think that's in large part what's powered this market over the last while. And, you know, I know statistics don't work well on rating, but on podcasts, but if you look on a one-year view, the basic materials index is up, I think, 11%, resources up 9.5%, industrials down almost 17%, banks down 8 or 9%, consumer services down 10%, financials down 10%. So, you know, you've had maybe the likes of Naspers doing reasonably well, Richemont largely holding level, but it's really been a commodity play, and the platinums, of course, have done their part, and as have the golds. But I think you're right. It's become a very polarized market. And the easy thing to do is to say, okay, well, you know, let's bullet all the South African SA Inc. stocks because they're just lousy. And look, you know, they're delivering 15-20% earnings slides and the occupancy rates are falling and the margins are being compressed and they're unable to manage the cost base. And, you know, they're unable to pivot towards fourth industrial revolution, whatever the narrative might be. Let's just go and buy Anglo's and Billiton's and Anglo Gold. And yeah, I think there's a lot of risk in that because ultimately what is good for the commodity plays is good for SA Incorporated. It just might take there might be a little bit of a rubber band, you know, before those guys benefit. So I think you just got to be a little bit measured in your approach and not sort of say, okay, well, you know, Anglo's had delivered 12 billions worth of earnings and, dollars, and, you know, they're just going to carry on spitting cash. It's still a good business. It's a good portfolio. But they too suddenly feel they're Teflon coated or bulletproof, and, you know, they're suddenly moving into potash and a whole lot of things, and, yeah, and are still buying back. So, yeah, I think you just got to be a little careful not to just get swept away with, just bullet anything like a City Lodge, local economy stocks, and just hold Naspers or Anglo American, because I think it could be exactly the wrong time to do that.
Okay, here's a question for you as we close this conversation. I've just won the lottery. I'm coming in. I've got a new suit from Sandton City. I'm coming in. I've never been an investor in the JSE before, and I sit down with you because I've heard you on this podcast, and I think you sound like a fine fellow, and you know what you're talking about. So I say, well, I've heard from some people that platinum is the place to be at the moment, and I know that gold's doing quite well because I watched the telly last night, and I've also heard that the South African economy is not doing well, and I also think that overseas is doing quite well because every single day when I turn on the telly, Donald Trump is talking about the US stock market going to an all-time record high. So can you construct a portfolio for me? What do you say to that person, that lottery winner? Do you say, no, well, just wait a second, or do you just say, do what you like, I'll go along with your ideas and hopefully you get it right? What's your attitude?
Well, I think you could say if you want to buy platinum and gold at this point in the cycle, you know, buying rhodium and palladium at these levels, then you know, it might be a case of easy come, easy go. Yeah, but I think seriously though, if you absolutely insist on being in the PGMs, I'd probably rather be in platinum itself. I think that metal has lagged, and even Chris Griffiths, who's relatively bullish on the PGMs, I think feels that maybe platinum has got a bit of catch up to play. I wouldn't be piling into the platinum stocks right now because just as you know, $100 or $200 move in the metal prices benefits them on the upside with some leverage. If those prices settle for any one of a number of reasons, and I think in the case of rhodium and palladium, it might just be a case of, you know, the feeding frenzy or the short covering or whatever it might be ceases. So I wouldn't be buying that. You know, if you want to, if you want gold because you feel gold is a reasonable hedge against chaos, then yeah, by all means, go and buy yourself some gold bullion trackers. Because the profitability of the mines has obviously changed radically. So the operating leverage has diminished. And arguably now you've got, you know, a $100 move on the downside is going to have a greater impact than a $100 move on the upside. Mm. And, yeah, so I think there's no reason to put a significant amount of money into platinum and gold shares. Rather just go and construct yourself a portfolio. You know, and you'll have some rand hedges because that's, you know, there are really good companies that offer you rand hedge elements, but you probably now would be tilting or pivoting towards, you know, those really unloved South African stocks that have been hit so hard. And then I'd say, right, let's take, you know, the 30, 50, 70% of your money, we'll go and buy a blue chip portfolio offshore. And then rather than trying to buy Bidvest as a quality counter in South Africa, I'd say, right, let's just go and buy you, you know, a Procter & Gamble or Unilever or, you know, even a BMW or Volkswagen offshore and build a good quality global portfolio for your kind of rand component and just buy SA stories that you like. And you just look at the South African banks. I mean, dividend yields over 7%. There's quite a lot of bad news priced in there. So I think that would be the way we would now be tilting it. Don't go lunatic fringe and try and, you know, play the tail end of a precious metals bull run. You know, just sit it out. You don't have to be there. Get your quality global exposure probably principally through a portfolio of 20 or 25 global stocks, and then your SA portfolio gives you stuff that is SA specific. And you can maybe even throw an Aspen or Discovery in there because, you know, they are interesting creatures in their own right.
Graham Koerner, thanks so much for your extended time and your excellent analysis. As always, that's Graham Koerner from Koerner Perspective in Johannesburg. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.